I'm Stacey Grinsfelder from Blake Hill House.
And this is Devin Caldwell from Our Philly Row. And we're the hosts of True Tales from Old Houses.
Hi, Devin. What have you been up to the last couple of weeks?
Well, I don't have any project updates, but I did take a much-needed long, restful weekend in the Hudson River Valley, where we rented it was a blacksmith shop, and it was built in 1790, turned into a house, and it was secluded in the woods. So some nice social distancing away from everything. It was really wonderful.
Did you take your morning walk every day?
I did. And it was great because I walked up a country road, which had a lot more hills than I expected. But it was awesome. I did between 2 and 2.5 miles each day.
Good. Very different than your normal everyday Philly walk, I assume.
Yes, definitely different. I saw lots of wildlife. It was interesting. On my walks, I saw a beaver. I saw a turtle, deer. It's just the animal life was amazing. Plus lots of beautiful flowers along the side of the road. And I think I only had encountered in 3 days of walking, which is like over 7 miles of walking, I encountered a total of like 8 cars.
8 cars. Wow. That sounds like a really nice trip. I've never been to the Hudson River Valley, but I will be there. I absolutely will be there because it was on my plan before the whole COVID debacle.
Yes, it's pretty amazing. And the antique shops in Hudson, New York are absolutely to die for.
I can't wait. So I happen to know why you went away, and it was your birthday. So happy birthday, Devin. I hope you had cake. Did you have cake?
I didn't have cake, but I did eat at a restaurant on a sidewalk, which is the first time I've been to a restaurant since March.
Oh my gosh. How did it feel? Did it feel weird?
It was weird and wonderful. The whole social distancing thing is interesting. I don't know how a restaurant with only 5 tables outside is going to be able to make it. And so we tipped really, really well.
Good. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, the social distancing has really put a damper on pretty much everything. But I guess as long as we all stay healthy and we can maybe get through this and not have a giant mess come winter, then it'll all be worth it.
Hopefully, yes.
Well, happy birthday.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Well, here, nothing to report, just loose ends, and more loose ends. That's pretty much all I'm doing here. So I'm not going to spend any time really talking about it. Hopefully one of these days I'll be able to say, hey, I finished this thing and I have a blog article and you can read it. It'll be wonderful. But for now, it's just little bits of everything and not everything of any one thing.
But loose ends add up.
They do. They do. I have to stay the course. Keep looking ahead.
Exactly.
I guess we can just move right into announcements then. We do have a few announcements. In fact, we had an announcement last episode that I completely forgot. We need a producer, someone who prods us along. Just to remind everyone that we do have this new Facebook group for True Tales from Old Houses. We didn't mention it last episode. We did mention it the first episode of season 4, but I blew it last episode. What else do we have going on?
Well, we do have the resources page on the website, True Tales from Old Houses, which lists a good number of old house resources. So far, we only have ones that have been approved by Stacey and I because they're ones that we're aware of. But we do take reader input. If you have a renovation resource that you know of that has been good for you, you can submit it to us on the comment form on our website, True Tales from Old Houses.
Excellent. Yeah. And that's pretty much everything we've mentioned in the past, right? Like things that we've used and loved. And it's not things that we were paid to talk about. It's things that we truly just
none of it
loved, love and use.
And as we continue to talk about things going forward, we will also be adding to that.
Yeah, that sounds great. All right. Something else that we put in the end of show notes, we have been all through this season and maybe even through last season too, but a lot of people don't fully read the show notes. They just kind of get the podcast right from, you know, wherever they listen to their podcast, so they don't see the show notes. But something we are currently seeking, a guest who lives either in like a lighthouse or a spite house. I love that those rhyme. Or other non-traditional spaces. So if you know someone, could you send them our way? Because we'd really like to talk to a person who's living in kind of a non-traditional old building. Our last announcement this week is, it's sad. I think it's sad. I mean, there's no real other way to say it. But in our old house community, we get pretty close over time. We see houses and we learn about people and we root for them, and then something difficult happens. And that's what happened. I guess it was last week, huh? It feels like it's every day, I'm sure. But we had a couple of friends, Kevin and Lane Berry, who ended up buying a house in Louisville, Georgia. And they named her Louise from Louisville, Georgia. And they actually bought her, if I recall correctly, and you can fill in, Devin, from like a Save This House. It was basically, this house was threatened with demolition.
Yes, yes. It was shared on Save This House. That's correct.
Okay, which is on Instagram. And Kevin and Lane, who have done this before, they decided that Louise was the house for them. And they went right in, and they were restoring it. They were preserving it. We actually had a conversation with them. We already have a recorded interview with them about Louise. But sadly, I don't know. Do you want to say what happened, Devin?
Yeah.
Crushed.
I know. It's crushing. Sadly, week before last, a bolt of lightning struck a tree, apparently. After they had done all sorts of work all day long, they'd wrapped up their work day, and it was in the evening. A bolt of lightning struck a tree adjacent to the house, which caught the roof on fire. The house basically is a total loss. And all of the effort put into it is just gone. And this house was very, very special. I had watched their YouTube videos and the house tour, and it needed a lot of work, but the quality of the interior and what was amazingly was still intact after all this time, given what had happened over the time of just the house not being taken care of very well, was mind-blowing. The house was so beautiful. And so I'm still deeply affected by the loss of this house. It's amazing how emotional you can become over a house.
So all this time, you know, it had stood there, and there was nothing anybody could have done. This was no one's fault. If there ever is something called an act of God, this was an act of God.
Absolutely.
You know, lightning came down, struck that tree, and that was the end of Louise. And gosh, anyway, we're telling you this partly because we were deeply affected. The other part is because we did do an interview with them that we're obviously not going to air right now, but we have talked to them since, and we might air parts of that interview at some point, or we may do something entirely new. I don't really know, but if you have any sort of good thoughts to send to Kevin and Lane, that would be great. And their accounts on YouTube and on Instagram are Saving the Big Little House.
Yep.
Today is just ever so slightly different. We've had several people on the survey or over time say, please talk about homeowners insurance. And I didn't have a specific question about homeowners insurance, but I thought we could take this little section to give you kind of a brief overview.
Yeah, that sounds great.
Okay. All right. So let me preface this. I'm going to talk maybe a little too fast even, because I just want to kind of sum up everything that I know about insurance. I live in a small community. I have, the population is very small, but it's about 6,200 people. And so I called my realtor friend and I said, you know, all the houses here seem pretty old. Like what percentage would you say are old? At least 50 years old or older. And she and I came up with a figure of at least 90%. So that gives you some idea of the community that I live in. So we're talking about houses that were built in the 50s, 60s, but a lot of pre-war stuff, a lot of houses from the 1800s. So I just wanted to give you kind of a picture of the community where I live. And then I thought, well, you know, I'm not an insurance agent. I don't know what I'm doing. So I called my insurance agent. He works for State Farm. I did tell him that I would tell all of you who I talked to. His name is Andy Girardi. I feel like it's only fair, since he consulted here, that I would tell you that he's my insurance agent and he works for State Farm. Basically, these companies have branded products. So you're talking about State Farm, you're talking about Allstate, you're talking about Geico, everything. They come up with a branded product package, basically. When you call them and say, I need homeowners insurance, then they have a packaged branded thing that they want to sell you, okay? Which is fine. That's good. That's what they're supposed to do. But I asked him some of the questions I was really interested in. One of them in particular was, well, I have a really, really old house. So how do you determine whether my house should be insured? And he said one of the key takeaways was, it's not so much how old your house is. It's what sort of upgrades have been done over time. And we're not talking about renovations. We're talking about like safety sort of upgrades. So if your house was built in the 1700s or the 1800s or whatever, it's not so much they're going to go, oh my gosh, your house is way too old to insure. It's more like, what do they do? Do you have regular electricity? When was your plumbing updated? How's your roof? How's your electrical panel? All those are the kind of things that they take into consideration. And they actually plug those into a little formula that kind of spits out the general gist of what they want to sell you. So they're like, all right, so the year your home was built is not so much a factor. My insurance agent only sells something basically called an HO5 policy. And that's a pretty standard policy. But there's an HO3 policy, which is just a very super basic policy. They're not going to cover very much, but maybe if you have a structure that's not livable yet, but you need at least some coverage, then you might talk to an agent about something called an HO3 policy. You know, I wasn't really sure where to go with this. I think the most important thing is that you actually understand and know your coverage. It's a gamble. You know, we're gambling on the fact that we will never actually need to call our agent and use our insurance.
That's right.
I think all of us want sometimes the minimum. You know, we're saying, oh, just give me the bare minimum. And that's okay, but you need to know what you're getting, because it's very different when you finally do have to call that insurance agent and file a claim, and then you don't want surprises. Like, we don't cover that. I'm sorry, you didn't pay for that insurance, that kind of thing. That's kind of the main takeaway, I guess, is that, you know, you just want to know what your coverage is. Now, one thing I ask him too, I said, and this is an old house question that comes up a lot. My house, if I sold it, is worth one amount. But my house, if I were to lose it and want to rebuild it as it is almost priceless, quite frankly. I mean, we're using ballpark terms. I'm like, what if I decided that I wanted to rebuild this exactly as it is, 4,600 square feet. I wanted my grand staircase. I wanted all my marble. I wanted everything that I have in this house. And, you know, it's like a $2.1 million house to rebuild. It's not to sell it, but, you know, to rebuild it, to hire people to rebuild it. But you can't really cover it in that way. Like, I can't buy $2.1 million of coverage for a house that I can only sell for a fraction of that. Does that make sense?
Right.
In an HO5 policy.
Totally does.
There is something called an HO8 policy. An HO8 policy does cover things like a non-traditional method, like plaster. Like, say you didn't want drywall, you definitely wanted plaster. And it would also cover things like woodwork, you know, getting special, having your woodwork redone, that kind of thing. That's an HO8. So if that's something that you want to pursue, then there's a search term for you. You can look into it. Again, I'm not an insurance agent whatsoever. These are just kind of things that I'm tossing out at you for you to start looking at and understanding your policy. Do you have any questions so far?
No, it's making sense. I had to admit this is, I think it's getting a little long though.
Yeah, I think so too, because insurance is not exactly a riveting topic.
Yeah.
Probably the key takeaways for me were to know what's being covered in your policy, understand what you've purchased, how it affects you, and also to shop around, because every company has different packages and policies that they put together. The other thing is to, of course, find an agent that you trust. All of us are gambling on the fact that we won't actually need this insurance and that we won't have to use it. If you do need to call in that insurance claim, you want somebody on the other end of your line who's got your back.
You got that right.
And that may have been a little boring. I hope you didn't fast forward through that, because it's important information. It's useful. It's helpful. Yeah, take it like your vitamin every morning, right?
Today's guests are a Milwaukee couple who had all but given up on finding a bigger house for their growing family until a realtor convinced them to do a walkthrough of a house that they had previously dismissed. Well, they were immediately smitten, and after moving in and beginning to work on their home, they found out a lot more than just who the first owner was. We'd like to welcome Alicia and Zach.
We are Alicia and Zach, and we own a prairie-style four-square home built in 1913 in Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Well, welcome, Alicia and Zach. It's so nice to have you here.
Yeah, we're glad you're here.
We're excited to do this.
Mm-hmm.
Good. Thanks so much for being on the show. So we know you're from Milwaukee Prairie Style. I think you are the first couple or the first person, people, that we have had here with the Prairie Style. We've had lots of bungalows. We've had lots of Victorians. My in-laws live in a Prairie Style house, and it is one of my favorite styles. I absolutely love it. Was it something that you were looking for in particular? I mean, we usually start out these interviews, of course, we talk about how you found your house. Were you looking for a Prairie Style house?
We weren't even looking for a house, so...
Yeah, we were looking for space. We had a lovely 1927 bungalow that looked like it had been brought to the 21st century in a time machine. It was just in original condition, beautiful. We bought it when we were kind of newly married, and we thought we'd never outgrow it, but then we had three kids, and we kind of did. And so first we thought, well, we'll just build into it. And we discovered how expensive new construction can be. And we realized our money's going to go farther if we just move, which we, like, honestly had never planned on doing. So we looked around and around.
Very reluctantly. We were not excited to look.
We were kind of heartbroken about it because we love that house.
We decided to pull the plug on looking. And we were like, we're going to go back to the idea of, because our second floor had never been refinished. And we were like, we're going to stop looking. We're going to pull the plug on that. And we'll just try to figure out a way to do the second floor. We were not people who had ever done work on a home. We had never, the house that we lived in was beautifully old, but was in such great condition, we didn't have to do anything.
No.
Then one day, our realtor...
Yeah, so there was a house that we had kind of looked at and almost kind of laughed at because the listing pictures were so, they were such a put off. Like, it didn't make you want to look at the house at all.
They were not good.
They were not good.
Those are the best kind, actually.
Exactly. Well,
it turns out. So
go look at the hoarder homes.
Yeah. So we got a call from our realtor that it was available for a showing if we wanted to see it. And I was at work, and I think I could have gotten away, but I was like, Alicia, you go. Like, I don't need to see it.
And we were
house.
Like, we've already decided we're not going to do this anymore. But she was like, let's just go see this one last one, and then you guys can kind of table this whole moving thing.
Yeah.
And so I went without Zach.
And then a few minutes later, and this is very Alicia, I just got a text that said, I think I just found our house.
As soon as I walked in, I knew.
Yeah. And I'd seen the pictures. So I was like, okay,
really?
talk me through your process. but it's just a beautiful old home. And I like that it's prairie because prairie is very Midwest. Like, everything about this house is so classic, like American construction styles, and so classic, just like Midwest. That's where prairie style stuff comes from. We've just kind of fallen in love with it.
Yeah, and I will say, anyone who's come, so we do have an Instagram account that has kind of taken off and been really, really fun. I started it just to document some of our process and our journey, but anyone who comes into our home who has seen pictures of the house, immediately they say, whoa. Like, the pictures just don't do justice to the grandness. And I really think part of that's because of the prairie style. It's very pulled back, like dialed back. Mm-hmm. It's clean, and it's, you know, trying not to kind of compete with anything. It's creating a very flowing, kind of pleasing to the eye aesthetic. Mm-hmm. So I think it just doesn't convey how sort of like, stately it is in the pictures. I mean, it comes across as very beautiful, but the grandness of it, that's the thing people comment on all the time. So I think that's why the second I walked in, I was like, oh my gosh, this house is unbelievable. So.
And your Instagram account is @BrewCityFoursquare. And we'll put that on the show notes, too, so people can be sure and find you and follow you and see your house. I've noticed that prairie style houses also kind of have an indoor-outdoor feel. I don't know if yours is that way, but it sort of feels like sometimes they're really maximizing this idea of being indoors, but being able to see outdoors and feel sort of a part of it. Do you find that your house feels that way in some ways, maybe?
It's interesting, yes and no. The house does have a clear prairie influence in that it's got just a low, wide kind of hipped roof and lots of horizontal lines inside and with kind of bars of windows. But traditionally, the prairie style home would be a single story home kind of in a wide open space. But you can't do that in the city. So we did some research and learned that when the prairie style was kind of imported into cities, what they basically did was they couldn't sprawl as much as they wanted to, so they had to build a more upright home. So instead of a kind of low rectangle, we have just this like box monolith. It's this big, beautiful kind of brick square. But there are There are stained glass windows in almost every room on the first floor and a couple on the second floor. And each room has its own unique floral nature motif where everything matches within the room. And I think that was an effort to kind of bring nature inside. Mm-hmm. And then there is like a big backyard and about as many windows as you could pack onto the house.
A lot of windows.
To see outside.
Yeah, quite a bit of light.
That's neat. I think a lot of us in our houses are trying to create these moments, you know, by moment, I mean sort of a picture in a certain place in your house. And I feel like Prairie Style kind of has those moments built in. You know, you get to a landing on a staircase and there's something beautiful to see, or you get to, like you said, your rooms, motifs and everyone.
Totally. I feel like modern architecture, you know, the house is kind of like the blank canvas to paint on with furnishings. Mm. But back then the house was part of the beauty, part of the decoration in the room.
Yeah. And we find ourselves like kind of stopped. I mean, we've been here for 2 years now, and it's still, there's these moments that capture us that we're just like, oh my gosh, that's such a beautiful corner. Mm-hmm. Or like, wow, like it causes you to pause. Mm-hmm. And I do think that's part of the style of that craftsman period for sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And this could be interesting for your listeners too, just because we did not set out to become like historic homeowners who are restoring a home. That all kind of happened because we fell in love with the house and then found ourselves in this situation. Mm-hmm. And we've tried to just sort of muddle along and figure it out in the process. Thankfully, we're very handy people. I mean, Zach's extremely handy. I can't even really fully claim that. I'm a really good painter because I painted for a couple years in college. True. You know, it's been quite an adventure. Hysterically, now we laugh about the fact that we didn't feel like we could tackle a second floor renovation in our old house.
Right.
And now we're tackling an entire home. So it's been really interesting kind of happening into this restoration experience and all the things that we've been trying to learn along the way. And it's not for the faint of heart, but also for us, it's become this shared passion and this hobby and this really great way to kind of do some self-care where like projects and like focusing on something with our hands. In some ways, we joke about the fact that we loved antiques and that was even a big part of how the two of us met and got together. Mm. But now it's like we bought the house to put all the pretty things that we'd been collecting for like 10 years. And it all just makes sense. Like since we started this process, we're like, we were made to do this. Like this just fits us. And it's like we found this like house calling that we didn't even know existed in us. Mm-hmm.
So we asked on the show today primarily to talk about amateur research. So many old houses have a story and a history, and the new homeowner doesn't always inherit that knowledge or information. And so we were wondering if maybe you could tell us a little bit about your process, because, first of all, I guess we should start with who is Waldemar Way?
Yeah.
Should we start there or should we start with the process? What do you think?
Yeah, I'm trying to remember the flow
the
of events, how
of
we found out about Wally. He was, so I think first we realized we were on the historic registry, because if you looked it up, it says the Waldemar Way House.
It's listed on the historic registry as him as the original owner. So that was the first way that we connected that name.
All right, let's start there then. When did you find that out? When did you find out about the historic register?
You know, because we're such house nerds, the second that we decided we loved this house and wanted to make an offer, you know, of course you start Googling it. And the first thing that comes up is the fact that it's listed in this historic registry. So pretty quickly, we had at least some basic, I mean, very, 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 you know, skeleton bones information to start working with. I don't even know that it fully registered for us that I think we just thought it was like, oh, here's some stuff about the house. I don't even know that it fully computed that it was on the historic registry, though.
I think that
was a big deal.
No, I think they mentioned it, and I it didn't fully compute. We were like, oh, okay, cool. It must be really old. And I remember looking it up and saying, okay, Waldemar Way, that's the name of the guy who built it.
Yeah, interesting. That's kind of interesting, right.
And I think it was probably right around the time we kind of got the keys that we finally started digging in to be like, who is this guy anyway?
Yes, and the biggest beginning of that was a discovery Zach made.
That's right.
Early on, probably within the first week in the house.
It was within the first week. So when we got the house, there was wall-to-wall carpet everywhere, and we knew that had to go. It was like church basement carpet. It was just bad, bad industrial carpet.
It was put there to preserve the floors for the generations.
Exactly.
Was.
Thank you for putting all that carpet in for all those years. We love all you people who did that.
That's what happened. So I was here cleaning up one night, maybe pulling up carpet, maybe cleaning, I don't know. And Alicia was at our old house. And they had left quite a mess. So I was going through and really kind of deep cleaning stuff. And I opened the built-in buffet in the dining room, one of the drawers, and there was this roll of old paper. And I was like, no. So I took it out, and it was the blueprints to the house.
The original blueprints.
And wow. I was like, I don't think this happens usually. So I'm looking at it, and I texted Alicia. I was like, Alicia, I just found the blueprints to the house. And she texted back in all caps. I was like, bring them here now.
You know? I was like dying. But I mean, that's like an old, we weren't even like old homeowners and like no. We'd been doing this for a long time. But I knew enough to know this is a huge deal. This is unbelievable. Yeah.
So sure. They said on them that the architect, the firm was Leiser and Holst. And so I just pulled out my phone and Googled that, and I found that they had designed a ton of famous stuff in the city of Milwaukee, famous restaurants and apartment buildings. I think they did a couple of theaters and stuff. And I was like, wait a second. They designed this house? Like, this house might be kind of important. And, like, we just didn't know. We just wanted space, and it was beautiful.
Yep.
And so it was kind of the combination of we've got the name of Wally. We found out that it was kind of prominent Milwaukee architects who designed the house. We were like, okay, let's dig in and see what we can find out about this place.
So some of what I have to say about research is that it's not entirely fair to compare other homeowners out there listening, wondering how they can do research on their house. Like, we kind of hit a house jackpot accidentally. So have low expectations. If you're going to do some research on your house, you are probably not going to start with some of these huge gems that we were just sort of gifted accidentally. But it doesn't mean that there isn't information to find. So some of that is like, we're sort of abnormally fortunate in this house. And that's continued to be a theme. Like, we've just every time we've kind of dug a little deeper, we've just found more and more and more. But that's not normal. So we lucked out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Wally.
Yes.
What do you want to say about Wally?
I'm trying to think. Like, so, I mean, it started with that one piece. Like, other than the architect name, we had his name. Mm-hmm. And our old house was near this historic cemetery in Milwaukee. That's the oldest cemetery in the city, called Forest Home Cemetery. And even when our kids were younger, we loved to go there. Actually, our youngest daughter, or we have one daughter, our daughter, she's our youngest. We got her name from a tombstone in that cemetery. Like, we're total... old house. We love history. So it's one of our favorite places to go as a family. So we kind of were like, hey, I wonder if he's buried at the cemetery. And so it was mostly just kind of, you know, just little tiny footsteps that we just took the next one and mm-hmm. followed very naturally. And cemeteries can actually be really great wealth of information, sometimes even more so than things you can find online, because it's actual physical, tangible knowledge, not just like someone posted once upon a time this piece of information they thought they knew, but maybe it's not actually accurate. You can figure out a lot about, you know, other names of family members and genealogies just by going to an actual cemetery. So,
which you totally did, because you found his family plot and
pretty quickly.
And you looked up the other people.
And he had a very big plot in a pretty significant part of the cemetery, mm-hmm. which then made me even more fascinated about who is this family? They seem like they kind of are a big deal for the city of Milwaukee.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right away, following the Waldemar Way name became a pretty easy thing to kind of go deeper with. Mm-hmm.
So did you follow that trail for quite some time?
Yeah, we are still following it.
Yeah. I mean, a quick Google search will show that he was kind of a prominent lawyer in the city of Milwaukee. He ran for public office. Well, he held public office. He was on the school board. I think he was an alderman once. He ran for lieutenant governor of the state and lost. And so that's kind of easy to find. And then we would kind of like... go from there, and we found that like his grandfather fought in the Napoleonic Wars and was like one of the first people to settle into the Milwaukee area before Wisconsin was a state.
There's a ton of really interesting German history in the in the city of Milwaukee. Yeah. At one point, Milwaukee had the highest population of Germans in it only outside of the city of Berlin.
Yeah.
which is just fascinating, thinking about how significant that German history is to this area. And Wally is definitely German, very, very German. Mm-hmm. So, and what we discovered is that his grandfather actually immigrated from Germany before Milwaukee was even established as a city. So they were literally one of the early established families in the city of Milwaukee mm-hmm. that kind of set the... I don't know, like, we're involved in, like, the forefathers of, like, this city.
Yeah.
So what year are we talking about here?
This would be the 1840s.
Yeah, somewhere between, yeah, right around there. There's so many rabbit trails you can follow once you start. And sometimes I almost lose track of them. And then I go back to my notes and I'm like, oh, I never followed up on that one rabbit trail. And I don't know if you guys have tips if you've done house history stuff, but it's hard to keep track of it all.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. I have a long spreadsheet.
Yep. Yeah, yep. I got to figure out a better way. I kind of just have hen scratchings all over the place, and I know the connections, but I need to get a better way to organize it all.
You guys will either love this or you'll hate this. You can decide. I'll tell you the story and you decide. When we bought this house, I also was not really completely into historical houses. I had no idea what I was getting, but our town has a historian, and I basically got a bundle of information about the house, and it included the original person who built it, who he built it for. It included exterior pictures from the turn of the century.
Wow.
I mean, it was like a little packet, and it was like, if you buy this house, you'll get this little packet. Now, also Ooh. In the state of New York, every time a property turns over, they add these notes and anything that changed during that time, and you get that whole packet. Like, the state doesn't have it. You get that, and you're responsible for it.
That's awesome.
Like, you cannot lose that. It's this huge, you know, they give it to you at this point. The house was built in 1885, so thick. And it's in my safe deposit box because they give it to you and they say, basically, this cannot be replicated and it's your responsibility to keep it.
Wow.
That's so incredible. Wow.
Yeah, I see every time, because this used to be a huge estate, and I see on there, I haven't really pored over it lately because it's been a few years, but you know, it shows every time the land was divided and when it was divided and who built the house and when it was resurveyed and who was the owner. And it's so interesting. So talk about lucking into it. You know, I feel like, oh gosh, it's so easy. You just get a packet from your town historian. What's wrong with you people?
There is a little bit of like jealousy envy there for sure, but I'm happy for you. That's great.
So let's jump in here for a second and talk about ways to support True Tales from Old Houses. There are non-monetary ways, such as tell a friend or your local historical society, basically anyone who loves old houses, about the show.
Right. And somebody shared us on a Facebook group our last episode, and that was wonderful. The next non-monetary way is to share us on social media. I guess that would count as the Facebook group. As you're listening to an episode, take a screenshot and share it with your friends and followers.
And we would love it if you would leave us a rating and a review on whatever podcast platform you listen to. We say it all the time because it's true. Those ratings and reviews help people find us and let them know that this show is worth a listen.
Right, so those are non-monetary ways, but if you're able, you could show us some love with a one-time or reoccurring donation over on the website truetalesfromoldhouses.com. If you donate in the $20 to $25 range, Devin and I'll send you an awesome coffee mug with the True Tales from Old Houses logo on it as a thank you gift. Your generosity in all ways keeps the show afloat, and we appreciate it very much.
So there are some ways to kind of look into this stuff that where you don't have to luck out. And these are some things we did. Mm-hmm. You can look up census records to kind of look at who lived in the house at least every 10 years, which not only helped us kind of try to figure out how long Wally was in the house, but also who lived in it after him, who's lived in it since. And so, and also in doing that, this is kind of one of the rabbit trails, as I'll give an example. In about 1930, Milwaukee revamped all of its street addresses. They changed the numbering system citywide. So our address right now is not what it was when Wally lived here. And so if I go back on census records, I found the original address. And then I was like, interesting. Okay. Now if I Google this address that no longer exists, I wonder what I'll find. And I'm trying to think, how did I do it? Oh, right. So I went back before Wally lived here. And I found an old address that no longer exists. So I had to find a PDF of the manual the city made in 1930 for how to kind of convert addresses. Mm. And I figured out what house he lived in before this house. And I found out that it's about like 10 blocks away. And I thought, well, that's interesting. Because actually, on the threshold of this room in the basement, Wally scratched his name in the wet cement. And we found that a couple weeks after having the house.
So cool.
So what I imagine now that I could piece those two pieces of information together is, okay, he didn't live that far away. He could walk over after work and just kind of check on the construction of his new house. Must have climbed down and kind of wrote his name in the cement, whatever. And then I thought, well, this is interesting. So if I can do this, I'm probably the only person who knows where Wally lived before he lived here, alive now. I wonder where his dad lived. So I looked on the census records for his dad, and his dad lived like across the street.
From the house.
From the old
before.
House. So I was like, well, this is sweet. Like, they had this connection, and I bet his dad would walk over with them. I bet it was just this family thing. They were so excited for this new house being built.
I love that story because I think it's such a good example of probably what has compelled us to keep digging.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, I think Zach and I really love story.
Right.
And when you live in an old home, you inherit a story.
Yeah.
And it makes me emotional a little bit. Talking about it, I'm such a nerd. But old houses have souls and like it surrounds you and you feel it when you live in a home like this. And you can't move in this space without wondering, like, who else moved here?
Yeah.
Like, what and how did they move? And why did they do it like this? And what did they think about this? And were there quirks like there are now? And, you know, you're just always in that headspace of feeling that connection to what was. And so I think for us, like, yes, there's some storytelling in what Zach just said. Like, maybe he walked here. Maybe he didn't. He did sign the threshold. So we're filling in the gaps a little bit, but
maybe they were fighting the whole time.
Right. Totally. Yes, exactly. But, you know, I think there's something sort of beautifully romantic about being able to fill in those gaps. And there's kind of a historical fiction component to living in an old home. Mm-hmm. And for us, at least, like, we love the story.
Sure.
I completely agree. I have to share that I, too, did a little digging on my house. I was able to go back through on the internet. They had city, before there was telephone directories, they had city directories. So I was able to go backwards and a large chunk of Philadelphia city directories are available on a website. And so I started going backwards shortly after we bought the house. And I got it all the way back to, I found the house on a map in 1862.
Wow.
So I was like, oh, this is super exciting. It was older than I expected.
Yeah.
I knew it was like at least 1870s, but I didn't realize how far back it went. And then I was able to go into directories and I found the address and then I found some names and I started going backwards. But then I hit a dead stop at 1856. Well, more research, I discovered the city did a big consolidation in 1854, 1855. And so all the local towns were absorbed into the county. And so the city of Philadelphia is the same as the county of Philadelphia.
Right.
So in the census numbers jumped dramatically for Philadelphia. It went from 100 and something thousand in 1850 to 567,000, I think, in 1860. Because they consolidated, and actually a couple of the other towns that were in that group were in the 1850 census, then they were blended into the city. I learned that they renumbered all of the streets in 1856. And so I couldn't figure out who was here, but I looked up houses on both sides of us and down our block, and I got a spreadsheet. And then I took those names and I worked backwards from those names. And that's when I discovered the address numbering system that was in place originally. And then I took that and I backed. And then I got the original owner of the house.
Right.
Nice.
Engelbert Ovensheen bought the house September 29, 1852.
What a name. Say that again.
I know. It's also, I think it's also German. Engelbert Ovensheen.
Oh, I love it.
Wow. Nice. That's a name.
Yep.
It's addictive, isn't it?
Yeah. It is.
And it's not like we're related to these people, but it starts to feel like it's your story because now you're in their house.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
We'll be cleaning and we'll find, like, I found like an old wheat penny from like 1911 behind a drawer when I was cleaning something. And I thought, oh, who dropped this? Did Wally do this? Was it his wife, Ruby?
Right.
Like, were they the last person that touched this penny I'm holding? And it's
right.
Like,
did they miss it when they dropped
it? Right.
We have these conversations all the time. When Zach gets up in the morning and gets ready for work, our bedroom is like, I mean, I don't know that they officially had like, you know, master bedrooms back then, but like when he gets ready for work, our bedroom has two closets. So that's why we know that it was kind of like, you know, Wally and Ruby's bedroom. And when he gets dressed in the morning and he goes into his closet, he's always like, Wally did this. Like, he would get, this is his closet.
Right.
Like, this is, you know, we have some old pictures of him, and he's like, he pulled those clothes out of my closet,
out of this,
you know?
Closet.
It's so interesting. Yeah.
As you said, I mean, we admit we're kind of romanticizing the history of who was, or the people who were in the house at the time. But I'm curious, do you ever think about what somebody 100 years from now might say about the two of you? Like, do you ever think of the story you're leaving behind?
That's fascinating.
For a long time, doing this podcast, and I'd start to hear these stories, and we were always telling somebody else's story. And it took a few seasons for me to remember or to realize, oh my gosh, like, I'm part of the story.
Right. Mm.
Do you consider you're part of the story? What do you think someone would say 100 years from now?
Mm-hmm. Boy, that's interesting. So
go ahead. You go.
So our oldest son, he kind of vacillates. Sometimes he says, gosh, I don't like living in the city. This is too busy. But then other times he'll say, I hope this house stays in the family. Like, I hope I get to come here when I'm older. And I'm like, well, that, do you want the house? Like,
he's only 10. That's a big deal that he's already thinking like that.
He tends more toward Victorian architecture, he's assured us. So this isn't his favorite. But anyway, I feel like, just kind of shooting from the hip in response to that question, I feel like my responsibility moving forward is kind of as a conservator. Like, I want to conserve this house. I feel like it's made it this long. My job now is not to change it. It's just to kind of maintain it so that somebody 100 years from now can look back and go, wow, this is what a house looked like in 1913 that hasn't been messed with much.
Yeah, I think partly because we are kind of, we're the first people in this home who aren't adding things. We're actually trying to strip away what's been added. So I think because of that, you know, maybe if we were the next generation of people coming, then I think maybe we'd think more about like, ooh, what's our legacy in this? It's a really interesting question. And it's not that I haven't thought about it, but I think we're in this very protective season of this home where we feel a lot of weight and responsibility about wanting to have it be able to even last for another 100 years. So I hope if there is a legacy that we give to this home, I hope that it will be that we allowed it to have the ability to make it another 100 years. Mm-hmm. And that's, I think, where a lot of our energy is with it right now. But I love the meta-ness of the question.
Mm-hmm. So you're finding things like wheat pennies. Should we all be like stuffing dimes and things like some, you know,
right.
We're all so careful. We're like, oh, don't leave anything, you know, but maybe we should be like tucking things under the baseboard or using vintage t-shirts to like plug holes in the walls or something.
Right. Newspapers.
Found those too.
Yeah. I love the people who will pull like wallpaper or like paneling off and they find a signature on the wall that says, we renovated this room. And, you know, there's pretty cool things like that.
That's
a little time capsule hiding in the wall. Although, if we're restoring this house, I hope nobody knocks down any of the walls that we would put up. So
right.
I would be, maybe I'll write, I'm judging you on the wall.
Right. It's a good question because honestly, some of the stuff we've found in the wall has really helped us like piece the timeline together. We knew the basement had been renovated, but we weren't sure when. And I was poking around on the ceiling and I found some newspaper plugging a hole as part of that renovation. And it said 1930?
Yeah.
1930. And we were like, oh, okay.
Now we know.
That's when that was done.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't know
if
it weren't for that newspaper.
Yeah.
So maybe we should be stuffing things in the wall and stuff. I think we will.
So funny.
Alicia and Zach, it was really wonderful to have you here on the show today. Thank you for talking about the history of your house and Wally. And I just appreciate so much your story and your passion for the project.
Thanks. It was great to talk with you guys.
We could talk about this stuff forever. So having an excuse to do it is really fun.
Yeah.
So thank you so much.
I just want to say we really love having you on the show today. It was a lot of fun to learn more about your house. I would encourage our listeners to follow you on Instagram and keep up with all the great things going on.
Right. And do you want to tell our listeners again what the Instagram handle is?
On Instagram, you can find us at Brew City Foursquare.
For more information about this episode, including show notes and transcripts, visit TrueTalesFromOldHouses.com.
Until next time.
Bye for now.